Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Good. Hello. Welcome to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. I was about to say good morning, but, you know, this is aired in many different time zones, so that would be a faux pas. So thank God I didn't say good morning. But anyway, hello. Welcome to the show today. We have a lot of stuff, a lot of news updates from last week that I want to finish on just the wackiness. And the gas stove bans here in the United States have resurrected their ugly heads. And many states have already moved forward to eliminate gas stoves and new construction. It's just an insane world where we wake up every day and some unelected bureaucrat or executive order or bureaucratic body has decided we can't have gas-powered cars. We can't eat meat anymore. We can't control our own thermostat. During COVID, we'd wake up and find out, you know, we had stay-at-home orders, that school was canceled, the churches were closed, all on the edict of someone under an emergency power, which, by the way, there's an update on that too. The COVID emergency powers, they're going to be ending in May in the United States, which means, hey, the emergency ends. Isn't that great? You can plan 5-6 months ahead when your emergency is going to end. And of course, this is all about power and money, because the money flow has been unbelievable to politicians and cities and the wealth transfer since the COVID pandemic emergency started. Okay, today we are going to be joined by special guest Don Deers. A longtime friend of mine and an energy expert. His latest book is called Clean Energy Crisis, The Challenge of Replacing Fossil Fuels. And Don Deers is a great engineering background, worked with General Electric Company in the power sector, provided engineering services for GE's large electrical apparatus. And so, Don, are you here with the program?
Yes, I am. Hi, Mark. Good to hear you again.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for joining me. Well, you must look at the world today, particularly in the last just couple years, pretty much since the Green New Deal was introduced, and then the COVID lockdowns came, and then all the environmentalists and climate activists and green energy activists saw how the world could be transformed without democracy. They love the idea. In fact, Jane Fonda called it COVID, God's gift to the left, because it allowed them to basically impose the Green New Deal overnight. You didn't have to go through long hearings on Capitol Hill. You didn't have town halls. You didn't have switchboards lighting up at the Capitol. You didn't have debates, committee hearings. Instead, you had unelected bureaucrats just say, hey, we're going to cut out air travel, car travel. We're going to do planned recession. We're going to shut the economy down right now. And they were marveling to the point where people like John Kerry, climate activists, were saying, if we can shut down the world for a virus, we can do the same thing for climate. So tell us a little bit about your background. What is your message on green energy as the world goes full net zero, as we're banning gas-powered cars, as we're going solar and wind? Everyone believes, when I say everyone, I mean the conventional wisdom is that the world needs to be saved and that green energy, solar and wind, is going to save us. Do you have anything to offer to the contrary?
I have a great deal to offer, and the book covers several messages, but I think an overriding message and an important message is that we have in the United States the largest reserves of fossil fuels in the world. We have more natural gas than any other country. We have more oil than any other country, and we have large reserves of coal. Now, this gives us a huge economic and strategic advantage. And if we get rid of the fossil fuels, we will be giving up those advantages. And instead, we will be dependent on other countries for the materials that are needed for wind and solar and battery-powered vehicles.
Well, so how did we get into this mess, you think, where all of this energy, all of our plentiful domestic supply of energy, which you just outlined, how do we get to the point in our country and in the world where it is seen as the most disastrous thing in the world if we use that energy, and instead we need to go to solar and wind and buy this from China and rely on Chinese rare earth mining and China on electric cars, and China now providing, passing South Korea and the United States for car production. How did this happen? I mean, how is this an ideology? Is it just some people who have the science wrong on climate and even energy? Or what's your view of how our world became so green energy mad?
Well, first of all, they do have the science wrong. And secondly, it's become a religion that we need to get rid of fossil fuels to save the world from CO2. And the science is not right. They claim that CO2 is going to be a existential threat to mankind, and it isn't. It has some effect, but it has a minimal effect. And when you look at Dr. Happer and his what his science shows, it's that a doubling of CO2 from this point would have a very, very small effect on temperature rise. So the climate alarmists have this wrong, and they use fear to try and convince people to get rid of fossil fuels. And every instance what they say is going to be a catastrophe. Every time you look at what they say is going to be a catastrophe, it's not true. And in fact, there's a chapter in the book that outlines about 9 different of these threats, sea level rise and so forth, that just aren't true.
Yeah, and
they
in
use
fact,
fear. They use fear to try and force people to adhere to their ideology of getting rid of fossil fuels.
Yeah, your chapter, one of them, you have chapter, part 2, chapter 9, creating fear to sell the climate change. So is fear the only way they could sell this essentially ban on fossil fuels, which is what net zero really is? It's going to stifle all of fossil fuels globally to promote so-called green energy. Is fear the only way you could do it? Because does science, physics, engineering support the idea that we can get off fossil fuels and go full solar and wind?
No, it's the other aspect of the science and engineering is that it's impossible to get rid of fossil fuels and maintain our lifestyle. I mean, it will put us back to the way we lived 200 years ago. There's a chapter in the book that explains and goes through each of these alternatives, wind, solar, nuclear, and the combination of them. And it shows that it's impossible to get rid of fossil fuels to get to net zero. So the engineering and science says that it's not possible to even do it. And if we try to do it, we will be really harming our country and our people.
Well, when you hear people like, Jane Goodall, the environmentalist, Hans Schuldenhuber, the German climate advisor, they will tell you that the carrying capacity of the Earth is only about 1/7, 1/8 of where we are. They want to see a planet where we have about 1 billion people. If we had less than 1 billion humans on Earth, could solar and wind be the solution, not the solution, but be a plausible scenario?
I don't. First of all, I don't subscribe to the idea that we ought to get rid of several billion people just to be able to achieve their objective. That's the old Ehrlich's population bomb, and the Club for Rome saying that we don't have enough. We can't continue growing and feeding the people of the world if we don't get rid of this, at least billion of these people. I don't subscribe to that. I don't even want to go down that road. And it wouldn't, if there's only 1 billion people left on the planet, I think we'll be chipping away at stones with other stones.
All right. Well, let's go through this one at a time. Now, first of all, one of the things we heard, you mentioned Paul Ehrlich. You know, I have him on record 1980 predicting oil would be run out within 10 years. We've heard so many times about running out of coal, how fossil fuels aren't going to be there and we need to find something else. First of all, what is your reaction and what's your research show on that? Are we running out of fossil fuels? Let's start with that.
No, there's no, I mean, at some point, who knows when, hundreds, maybe thousands of years in the future, we're not going to run out of fossil fuels anytime in the near future, and or anytime in the foreseeable future. The United States, for example, we have just an unbelievable amount of natural gas. We have the most natural gas of any country in the world, and we could supply natural gas to the rest of the world for years in the future, you know, using LNG. So, no, there's, I mean, the old peak oil theory, they were talking about peak oil back in 1930, and we managed to have a lot more oil ever since then.
Yeah, I think when they talk about, say, for instance, how gas with fracking, then they didn't know. Fracking revolution made us access gas and oil we never would have been able to in using conventional methods. And of course, that, of course, led the United States leading the world in CO2 reductions as we transitioned off coal in favor of natural gas. But let's go through one at a time in terms of, let's talk about energy sources. Coal, how is the world doing with coal? The belief is, you know, coal use as a percentage of our energy has declined in the U.S., but what's happening globally? Is coal about to just be stopped used everywhere? Is everyone just going solar and wind?
No, I mean, that first of all, there are a lot of people in this world that don't have access to electricity and or have minimum access to electricity. And the best way for them to get that access is to use coal-fired power plants. Because there is a lot of coal in other parts of the world, in Indonesia and India and so forth. And the new coal-fired power plants are extremely efficient and have low emissions. So they can provide electricity without harming the atmosphere. And the people in Africa and other parts of the world, they can use coal to their advantage. Now, we're very fortunate. We have so much natural gas, we don't have to use coal. And and it turns out that natural gas is the power plants are less expensive to build, and it makes a lot more sense to use natural gas. But in the rest of the world, where they don't have natural gas, they can use coal, and they can use it to their advantage, and they can use it safely and cleanly. And I'm referring to the high efficiency, low emission, ultra supercritical coal-fired power plants that China is building. And they're building a lot of them, maybe 40 or 50 of them right now. So they know that coal can provide cheap electricity, plentiful, and without harming the atmosphere. And people in India and Indonesia and Africa should take advantage of the coal reserves that they have or that are available.
Yeah, coal is actually, in terms of a national security energy source, it's one of the greatest for countries to rely on because they can produce it all at home. They don't have to worry about supply chains in other countries. And there's been many issues on that. Well, let me ask you about oil. I mean, we have Joe Biden begging OPEC to increase oil production. Joe Biden making deals with Venezuela to bring oil back to here. Joe Biden raiding our strategic petroleum reserve to the lowest level in decades right before the midterm elections, using the strategic petroleum reserve for a political, basically a political funding operation. But Is the U.S. running out of oil? Why are we begging all these hostile regimes with poor environmental records to get oil when we should have it here? But is there a problem with our oil here in America? Why can't we get domestic oil instead of begging our adversaries?
Well, the problem is that the administration is making it difficult, if not impossible, to drill for oil where we have it. I mean, they have restricted leases on federal land. They've made it difficult to get permits. So the problem isn't that we don't have enough oil. The problem is that the government is preventing us from getting to it easily and cheaply. It's a government problem. It's a government problem, not a problem with having the oil itself.
What about nuclear energy? I saw where the U.S. is about to. Yeah, good.
I was just going to say that the United States, when you consider Alaska and our reserves in the Permian Basin and in the Gulf of Mexico, we have the largest reserves of oil of any other country in the world, including Saudi Arabia. We have more oil than Saudi Arabia. And the only problem is that the government is preventing us from getting to it. They have restricted where we can drill and how we can drill.
And do you expect that, you know, even under, you know, this is a problem because it can go past administration. So when they have these restrictions, these are a lot of times baked into federal agencies, permitting processes. How do we resolve that? I mean, this has to be a wholesale change at the government level in terms of stop demonizing these fossil fuels, because that's essentially how the government passes these regulations. How do you see a way out of opening up a U.S. domestic energy exploration, be it coal, oil, and mining as well?
Well, it requires a change in how we view climate change and how we view CO2. We have to get off this idea that we have to get rid of CO2 in order to save the planet. We've got to set that aside and realize that we don't have to get rid of fossil fuels. I mean, there's three ways to look at this issue of climate change. And the one way is that it's an existential threat and we have to get rid of fossil fuels. That's what the extremists say. The second approach, which is what has a number of people have, Bjorn Lomborg, they say, yeah, CO2 is a little bit of a problem, but we can work around it. We don't have to get rid of fossil fuels. And the third way of thinking about this is that, yeah, CO2 is not a problem. It won't cause large increases in temperatures, and therefore there's no reason to get rid of fossil fuels. So it's only that first one, that extremist view, that's keeping us from using fossil fuels to our best advantage. And it's the extremist view that we have to counteract in some way. We have to educate everybody that this is not an existential threat to mankind.
That extremist threat, though, seems to have that extremist ideology seems to have captured our media. I mean, you can't watch CNN or NBC News or CBS or read the New York Times without that, you know, breathless, you know, we're all going to die, end of world. And it's also captured international bodies, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. World Health Organization, of course, has declared climate the greatest public health threat of the 21st century. How did that extremist view of climate take hold across basically every power institution on the world, academia, media, corporate boards, kowtow to this whole agenda? How did this happen, you think?
Well, it all started back in 1992 with the Rio meeting, the convention of all the nations in the world. I forget what they call the summit, but at that time,
the Earth Summit, yeah,
the Earth Summit. Thank you, in Rio de Janeiro. And at that time, they established United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And as a treaty, and that United Nations Framework on Climate Change had as its objective getting rid of fossil fuels and saving the planet. Now, interestingly, the United States ratified that treaty, so we are a part of that treaty in the United Nations Framework and Convention Change climate change. And we're supposed to be following and adhering to that treaty. Now, another aspect of that treaty was that every year, and every year since 1992, there has been a meeting of the parties called COP, Convention of the Parties. And every year, all the nations of the world get together and discuss how to get rid of fossil fuels. Now, every year, that becomes a tradition where the media starts to follow it, governments start to follow it. It becomes built in with the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change. And so they have been able to, over the last 30 or whatever it is years, 35 years, they've been able to build up this crescendo of fear that climate change is going to destroy the world and we have to get rid of fossil fuels. So one of the steps that could be taken is for the United States to get out of that treaty and to start educating the rest of the world that that treaty is a bad deal and it's going to hurt everybody, including the poorest people in the world.
Yeah, well, that is exactly right. That's a tall order. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Don Deers, the author of Clean Energy Crisis, The Challenge of Replacing Fossil Fuels. Brand new book just came out in 2023. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Be right back after these messages.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
So I'm going to go down to Washington, and we've got these six bills, and we were very, very confident before Congress, you know, broke up for the Christmas holiday that we had one bill in particular, KOSA, K-O-S-A, Kids Online Safety Act. And we thought for sure this bill was going to be, just needed one more push. And you know what? It just wasn't brought to vote. Things in Congress where they go, child safety issues, where they go to disappear. But I'm going to go down there next week, be part of the Congressional Roundtable. We are going to, again, you know, empower ourselves and others. We're going to get these bills back on the floor. We're going to talk to our Congress. We are going to talk to congressional aides, legislators, anybody we can. We have to get these issues on the floor. You know, you've got to contact your elected representatives. After all, you pay taxes, and we're paying a lot of taxes in the United States, and we'll be paying more taxes under the current administration. You have a right to know who represents you, because most people I ask, they'll say, I don't even know.
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at salemnow.com.
Challenging the consensus. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're talking with Don Deers, energy expert. His new book, brand new for 2023, Clean Energy Crisis, The Challenge of Replacing Fossil Fuels. All right, Don, I wanted to talk just briefly about nuclear energy. I saw where the United States is building a new small-scale nuclear plant, the newest technology, and also with nuclear energy. This has been a debate for years. We need to expand nuclear, but it's never really happened. If you go back to the 1970s, you had the Hollywood movie, the China Syndrome with Jack Lemmon and Jane Fonda, demonizing nuclear energy. There's just been a basic fear of nuclear energy. In terms of our energy supply, how important is nuclear energy, and what future do you see for nuclear energy?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought up the China Syndrome, because I do cover that in my book. The idea there was that if there was a meltdown the melted core would bore down into the earth and hit the water table and create a plume of radioactive material over that would cover the entire state of Pennsylvania. It was a total lie. It couldn't happen, and I explain why it couldn't happen. But that was the beginning, and of course, the movie came out just before the Three Mile Island incident, so that they were able to use that and parlay that into creating more fear among the American people. And fear of radiation has been one of the main obstacles to getting people to accept nuclear power as being safe, and it is safe. Now, the type of nuclear power plants that we've been building are boiling water reactors around 1,000 megawatts each in size, and they account for about 19% of our electricity today. Unfortunately, we haven't built a new nuclear power plant over the last 10 years or so, except that there is one that's going to come online here shortly, the Vogtle power plant in Georgia, which is 1,000 megawatt unit. But that will be the first one we've built in over 10 years. And the problem is that the cost of building these nuclear power plants has become exponentially unattainable. Just as a couple of numbers, I hate to use numbers, but to build a natural gas power plant costs $1,000 per kilowatt. The nuclear power plant that's going to be going online shortly is going to cost around $17,000 per kilowatt to build, and that is a huge albatross of a cost. Nuclear power has to cost around $3,000 per kilowatt to be competitive. So the problem is fear and high cost. Now, the new proposed small modular reactors have the potential for solving both those problems. The small modular reactor will hopefully be able to be built for around $3,000 per kilowatt. And so it will be competitive with natural gas and coal and so forth. And it will be safer because it will be the nuclear part of the system will be basically buried underground. And that will help eliminate the cost of building a containment structure. The generation equipment, the turbine and so forth, will be above ground, but the nuclear part of the plant will be below ground. So the idea is to build these small modular reactors. The NuScale reactors is rated at 66 megawatts. And it's small, and you can build one small one. It will serve a local area. And if you want to, if that area grows, you can then add another one. So it's modular. You can add new units as demand grows. And those smaller modular reactors, and there's several designs, and I discuss this in the book, have the potential for reviving the nuclear power industry in the United States.
Now, if we're looking around the world, we always told France is the model. Which countries are the model, and what should our policy have been? What country can you look to? Is it France that has the sort of the best model that includes nuclear energy with a whole above all the above energy supply?
Well, it is true that France has a very large percentage of its electricity generated with nuclear power. I think it's around 70-75%. I don't want to call it the right model because they went about it the right way. They built these nuclear power plants, and then they recycle the spent nuclear fuel in order to reuse it, which minimized the amount of waste that had to be stored. So they did go about it the right way. The same types of power plants. They're boiling water reactors. Pardon me. So, but we allowed costs to get out of control, and that's what's caused it. Fear and cost is what has caused us to be the situation we are today. Now we have, I believe it's around, I've got to double check, but it's around 70 nuclear power plants in operation today. But every one of them, maybe it's 80, but every one of those power plants has to have their license renewed over the next several years in order for them to operate for another 20 years. But even if all those are renewed, all of the existing nuclear power plants, except for the Vogtle plant that's coming on in Georgia, all of those nuclear power plants will have to shut down by the mid-1960s. So we need to replace those plants with these new small modular reactors. Otherwise, nuclear power will disappear in the United States.
Okay. Well, let's talk about solar and wind. Let's start with wind. A lot of controversy here in the United States about different species of whales being impacted, the right whale and all the whale beachings along New Jersey, New York. And then, of course, the amount of energy it produces and where we buy windmills from, who produces them, and any rare earth mining. What is the problem with wind power? Is wind ready to take over for fossil fuels?
Well, neither wind nor solar can take over from fossil fuels. There's a couple of very fundamental problems. First of all, they're intermittent. They're actually unreliable. So you can't rely on them to generate electricity when you need it. And that's a fundamental problem. That they say they can get around with batteries, but there hasn't been a battery invented yet that can store enough electricity to ensure that we won't have blackouts. Now, the fact of the matter is that you trying to rely on wind or solar in order to supply power, it won't work, and we will have blackouts. Now, Texas is probably a good example of what happened, though the situation was the water was muddied a little bit because they had some other problems too. But Texas has built a lot of wind turbines. In fact, more wind turbines than solar. And 2 years ago, I guess it was 2 years ago now, they had a complete shutdown of their grid. ERCOT just collapsed. And Texas went without power for a couple of days. 200 people died. And the main reason for that was that they were relying on wind to provide reserve power so that if there was a problem, the wind would step in and solve the problem. But wind wasn't available, so it couldn't step in and solve the problem. And as a result, the entire grid collapsed in Texas. So that's the fundamental problem with wind and of solar, is that it is intermittent and unreliable and cannot be relied on to provide that reserve capacity that every utility system in the United States must have in order to ensure reliable, safe electricity without blackouts.
Well, and then in terms of solar power, there's always been this, I see it in my neighborhood, I see it locally, put a solar on your roof and your energy bills will be cut and you'll can eventually get off the grid. There's an implication that somehow we'll put a solar panel on our roof and we'll get off the grid and we'll be able to have all homegrown energy from the sun with no environmental negatives whatsoever. First of all, what percent is solar of our energy, and where what does solar energy, a mandate of solar energy, really mean for our energy supply, and what countries benefit from this push for solar and wind?
Well, the I think solar and wind together count for about 9% of our electricity now. I think, and solar is a small part of that 9%. In terms of who benefits, actually, China benefits because most of the solar panels that are being built today and installed today are made in China. And so China is the beneficiary of wind, of solar, and also of wind. Another interesting aspect of this is that, getting back to wind, is that wind and to some extent solar require the use of rare earth materials. And nearly all of those rare earth materials come from China. So China is the beneficiary of both wind and solar. And we are going down the path of exposing ourselves to being dependent on China for those materials.
When you look at what they've also done with cars, electric cars, we now have an entire movement to ban gas-powered cars. Governor Newsom in California did an executive order. Unelected bureaucrats, California Air Resources Board, said they came up with a timetable, I believe 2035. 19 or 21 states have trigger laws to follow California's example. Major corporate banks, led by one in Australia, said they're not going to give out car loans to anyone who buys a gas-powered cars. The World Bank has indicated to automakers at the automaker level they will not finance the production of gas-powered cars. Yeah. They want everyone to go all electric cars. Now, is that feasible? Does that make sense? Does that is that the good engineering practice?
Well, it's a first order of insanity when you get right down to it. Excuse me. My book, Clean Energy Crisis, goes into this in some detail because it's possible to calculate and determine how much of each of these materials, nickel, cadmium, graphite, and so forth, are needed in order to produce these battery-powered vehicles. And if all the cars in the world are battery-powered, we're going to need hundreds of new mines to produce the materials. And remember, it takes 10 to 20 years to develop a mine. And if we need hundreds of mines by over the next 20 or 30 years, it just ain't going to happen. Now, the book takes an approach which I think brings it down to something that's easily understood. I will add that the Finnish Geological Survey did a massive report, 1,000-page report, in which they concluded it was not possible for the Earth to provide enough materials to support battery-powered vehicles. But the way I approached it in the book is to say, look, if all the battery-powered vehicles sold every year were battery-powered, if all the cars sold every year were battery-powered vehicles, how much material would be required? And it turns out that it is not possible to, with the mines that are in existence today, to provide all those battery-powered vehicles. I use an example, graphite. Now, graphite, everybody knows what graphite is. It's the ordinary materials used in an ordinary pencil. Well, the largest graphite mine in the world that just opened up recently is in Mozambique. And it produced 107,000 tons of graphite. Now, in order to supply enough batteries for all the battery-powered vehicles that we sold this year in the world, we would need to add 24 new mines able to produce 107,000 tons of graphite every year. And it 24 new mines of that size is an impossibility over the next 20 years, especially. So it just demonstrates that the idea that we can convert from internal combustion engines, where we have plentiful supplies of oil and plentiful supplies of gasoline, and just convert all those to battery-powered vehicles, and by the, you know, it just isn't going to happen. We don't have the materials, and we can't possibly create enough new mines to produce the materials, nickel, cadmium, graphite, and so forth, lithium, in order to produce that many battery-powered vehicles in a year. And that is just the number of vehicles that we built this year. And that doesn't include growth. So it's insanity to think that we can do that.
Well, on your point, I think what they're doing is intentionally, they know this, and they're intentionally, by banning gas-powered cars and mandating this electrical, they are literally intentionally creating car shortages as a way to force people into mass transit. And they know this, and they know there's not going to be enough electric cars. It's going to be like the old East German situation where there's going to be one government-approved car, the crappy East German Trabant, and we're going to be on years waiting list to get one. And I think that's what they're hoping for, because that will mean less driving, less emissions, better for the climate, and then better control of the population. They'll be able to put you on mass transit where they can require masking and vaccine mandates and all sorts of government. You know, you have to be a good citizen in good standing to be able to move. And we're seeing this across Europe with the 15-minute cities where if you leave your sector, again, a very East German-sounding phrase, you will be penalized and taxed if you drive your car out of your little 15-minute village. So I think this all plays into it. I think your analysis is exactly correct, Don, but I don't think they care that this is insane and that this will mean not enough cars. That's their goal, is to create intentional car shortages.
Well, I think you're obviously right. I mean, the climate alarmists and climate extremists, their goal is really not to get rid of fossil fuels. Their goal is to change the way we live and to create a new society. And I'm glad you recognize that and that it was restated, because that's a fact. It's not possible to do the things that they say we should do, and they know it's not possible. So if they know it's not possible, and they admit that, if they know it's not possible, then they have to have an ulterior motive. And the ulterior motive is to change the way we live.
And that's exactly what they're doing. Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been Don Dare's Clean Energy Crisis, the author of the new 2023 book, Clean Energy Crisis, Challenge of Replacing Fossil Fuels. Thank you so much for joining the Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio. And look forward to seeing you later this month down in Florida. We're going to be coming to the Heartland Climate Summit, and I think you'll be right outside of there. We're going to come visit. So thank you again, Don, and good luck with your book, Clean Energy Crisis.
I thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I am looking forward to seeing you. It'll be great.
All right. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Again, the book is Clean Energy Crisis by Don Dears. Highly recommend it. It goes through the energy one by one in a very understandable, reader-friendly way. So thank you very much. We'll be right back after these messages.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Don't miss the forest for the trees. The real story today isn't whether Alec Baldwin's Spanish wife, Elaria, is actually from Spain. Of course she isn't. She's Hillary Lynn Hardway Thomas from Weston, Massachusetts. She's as American as Alec is. And the real story of the day isn't whether Damar Hamlin was really at the Bills game. It was probably a body double. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? Who cares? The real story of the day isn't even that Mike Pence rushed to Joe Biden's rescue in the document scandal by conveniently finding some classified documents in his own house. Funny that he didn't rush to President Trump's defense, finding documents in his own house. No, the real story of the day is the absolute clown world that we're told to believe in, that anybody with half an ounce of common sense knows is completely false. But that's the Democrat Party today. Up is down, left is right, and right is wrong. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
We're at a party. Three little kids were playing in the pool, all under five. Adults were busy talking, glanced over, noticed a little one underwater. I think she needs help. That's how easily something can happen. It only takes a few seconds. Don't worry, the party had a happy ending. But we need to remember, fence the pool, shut the gate. Teach your kids to swim, it's great. Supervise, watch your mate, and learn how to resuscitate. I'm Laurie Lawrence. Kids alive, do the five.
Challenging the consensus. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, well, this is just nuts. The climate movement just keeps getting nuttier and nuttier and nuttier. My breaking news story this week at Climate Depot. First of all, from 2020, to give you a little background, we have the American Cancer Society fretting about the carbon emissions, the carbon dioxide emissions of cancer care, chemotherapy, and ways to lower that. So they actually had a whole alarmist warning about, you know, we have to do something about climate. All these people have cancer. All these treatments are making global warming worse. So you have to decide, do you want to live to get your cancer treatment, getting your cancer treatment, or do you want to save the planet and just allow yourself to die? Which, by the way, lowers the population and actually helps improve the planet according to the population control nuts. Well, just this week, and I'm not making this up, Dr. Mohammed Fayyad, a senior anesthesiologist at the Detroit's Henry Ford Health Clinic, made this comment during the American Society of Anesthesiologists. He suggested, quote, lowering the flow of anesthetic gas in patients to save the planet. 1 hour of surgical anesthesia is equivalent to driving 470 miles in a car. Now think about this. This is at a major convention of the American Society of Anesthesiologists this week in Orlando, Florida. They're worried about using anesthesia on patients and they want to lower it so they can lower the carbon footprint of the anesthesia process. Now, I would be fine with lowering anesthesia if the goal was, hey, maybe we're giving too much. This isn't good for the health of the patients. This is dangerous. We've done studies. This is going to be good for the patient. This should be about patient care, not earth care in their minds, in their warped, frustrated, sick, unscientific minds. And so he talked about the question is, would you suffer to combat climate change? And in the same thing, there's an article out. This is in the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Reducing anesthetics during surgery decreases greenhouse gases without affecting patient care, study shows. Now, if that's true, but again, I don't want doctors worried about the carbon footprint of their care. I want them looking at only that. The fact that this is motivated by that makes me scared, because somewhere in that little addendum, there's going to be a, well, you know, if it kills a few people to save the planet, that's worth it because more people will be saved if we lower the carbon footprint. Frightening, frightening stuff. And this, again, in 2020, a study in the American Cancer Society fretted over the carbon footprint of cancer care. They said climate change and cancer. This was the title. To date, no studies have estimated the carbon footprint of cancer care, the energy expended associated with operating cancer treatment facilities, as well as manufacturing, packaging, shipment, and pharmaceuticals contribute significantly to greenhouse gas emissions in cancer care. This is all part of that net zero. We have to lower our emissions. Patient care goes to the wayside. In the other areas, food delivery in the United States going to the wayside, transportation going to the wayside, our freedom of movement going to the wayside, our energy supply going to the wayside, our diet, food, high yield, all going to the wayside, all because we have to pay fealty to this climate god. This is the return of paganism. We sacrifice. We provide the flesh and the death and the human sacrifice in order to appease the climate gods. My question, which applies to both the American Cancer Society and the Anesthesiology Society, if you need a medical treatment, would you go to a treatment center that was worried about its carbon footprint or one that was worried about delivering the best possible modern medical care? And that is the question we have to ask ourselves. This is just bonkers where we are with this world. Okay, another major report this week featured at Climate Depot. And I love this headline. You will go nowhere and be happy. There you go. You will go nowhere and be happy. The Biden administration just released, it dropped, I believe, late this week on Thursday or Friday of this week, floated a strategy to address the climate crisis. Don't leave your house. And their goal is to reduce CO2 emissions with more remote work and virtual interactions. The report goes through, basically loves what happened during COVID. This was the greatest boon to the whole climate agenda, the COVID lockdowns. And essentially, they want, quote, more remote work and virtual interactions. They literally want you at home. Stay at home orders. You'll go nowhere, be happy. This is what the Biden administration's come. This is a plan that from Joe Biden's Environmental Protection Agency and the Transportation and Housing Departments, they released jointly. And the goal is to eliminate nearly all greenhouse gas emissions from transportation by 2050. Now, again, it's this insane ideology, the rigidity, and they actually believe that the planet's going to smile and they don't care about what impact this is going to have on people's lives. They argue that highlighted major opportunities to reduce travel and through remote work and virtual interaction. So, and of course, I went through just recently the great travel reset, Bloomberg Air. Air travel, a luxury for many. Flying has moved upmarket, reduced social mobility. That's the goal. The goal is to get us to only the very wealthy, the uber wealthy could afford the seaside vacation once a year. The rest of us are going to be doing staycations because we're not allowed to, we're not going to be able to afford to leave our home. 2021, German health minister said climate travel restrictions are and prohibited behavior will be required in order to meet the net zero goals. The great car reset. I mentioned this earlier. So end up like Cuba, where everyone driving around 1950s California cars, or East Germany, where we're on waiting lists for the only government approved cars. I mentioned this with my interview with Don Dares, the 15 minute cities, climate lockdowns in Oxfordshire, UK. Social credit system for travel. Council seeks to cut your car use by placing strict rules on car journeys to meet net zero goals. Your freedom of movement is targeted. This is, again, this is all just in the last few months, all these stories. Scottish government declares the era of unconstrained growth in private car use is well and truly over. The government aims to discourage car use by reducing the need to travel unsustainably to meet, drumroll please, net zero climate goals. Stanley Johnson, the father of UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, reveals his net zero carbon budget plan. And he's all for this. He's been on UK TV. If that means actually some of us are told, well, you can't go on a plane, that's fine. That's part of the national plan. You see, we're all sacrificing for Gaia, the planet. And this is where we have to just accept less because we're doing such a great thing. It's just, it's so awesome. Okay. Now, remember, I've told on this show repeatedly that climate and COVID are being merged. I'm not making this up. This is a headline, UK Daily Mail. Deadly fungal infection, the Valley Fever, is spreading across the USA because of climate change. Researchers predict that by 2100, U.S. case numbers of Valley Fever will increase by 50% spread due to climate change, meaning more hot areas for the fungus to grow. So you see, if you don't support the Green New Deal, you're causing more COVID-like viruses. You're causing more valley fever funguses, which will kill us all. We have to pursue this. We have to give up cars. We have to give up modern energy. We have to give up meat. We have to give up control of our thermostats. We just have to, because people are going to die. Don't you see? They're going to die. Sorry, getting a little carried away there. But this is just the insanity of what's happened. And this is just a few days of news that I'm giving you information for. The other thing I alluded to this week was about the whales. I talked earlier with Don Deers about it. And amazing Greenpeace co-founder Dr. Patrick Moore was on Fox News talking about saving the whales from big wind energy. And they showed the old footage of Greenpeace out there. Where Greenpeace in the 1970s on whale missions to stop the harpooning of whales. And here's a question for you. It's now 2023. Where are those Volvo-driving, save-the-whale liberals when you need them? Well, they're not around anymore. And that's what Patrick Moore was talking about. He went on five voyages in the 1970s to save the whales. And now we have serious questions about what's happening off the shore with all of this. It messes up their whales' sonar and sound, all the excavation that they pour concrete to do offshore wind that's going to provide virtually no energy, be a boon to China, and be ugly and harm wildlife. They get a pass. Try a fossil fuel project or a dam or some development project getting the same kind of endangerment to species. They'd be shut down immediately. The wind is still allowed to go. Sorry, this has been the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you so much for listening this week. And we'll be back next week with another action-packed episode. And I'll get in a little deeper to some of this news stories. I don't know who the guest is going to be yet, but we shall see. So thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.